We're back in on Canuck Central. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah. Game number two of a three-game slate on the NHL sked tonight is underway. Seattle losing the first one. St. Louis gets one on them. And now you got the defending Stanley Cup champs hosting the Boston Bruins as the Florida Panthers kick off their title defense. And you get to watch a couple of former Canucks in Elias Lindholm and Nikita Zadorov suit up for their new club, the Boston Bruins. Later tonight, the Utah Hockey Club will have their first game in Utah, and they're hosting the Chicago Blackhawks. Joining us now to talk about it, Cole Bagley, digital insider for Utah Hockey Club on KSL Sports. Thanks for this, Cole. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
We're doing really well. So how's the setup been? I mean, 5 months to put together a National Hockey League team seems like a pretty short runway.
It's unbelievable. I think when people really, take a step back and look at what this organization and this ownership group has done in such a short amount of time, it's pretty unbelievable. When I first heard the news that the team was coming here, I wasn't sure that they were going to move them right away. I was almost anticipating like one more year in Arizona because, how do you prepare for a full transition to a different state in the National Hockey League? But Ryan Smith, Beth Entertainment Group, have done an unbelievable job from the setup at the Delta Center to branding to the sweaters to just getting this community completely involved and just ecstatic about having hockey in a state that, is not overly familiar with the game. So, my hats off to them, and we're in store for an incredible night and an incredible future of the NHL in Utah.
Well, and one thing that I think is maybe not going underlooked, but being overlooked. But I do think the roster that the Utah Hockey Club has is pretty competitive. I mean, defensively, they're good. Goaltending, I think they might be sneaky good. And up front, they have some exciting players. So it's not just, happy to be there. This Utah team looks to be ready to compete as well this season.
Yeah, I mean, I did some bold predictions the other day in an article, and one of those, if not, the boldest that I laid out was that this team will make the Stanley Cup playoffs. Just based off, like you said, some of the talent that they have and guys like Nick Schmaltz and Clayton Keller, the young guns that are poised for breakout seasons, if you will, and Dylan Gunther and Logan Cooley and Barrett Hayton. And then the additions that they made defensively, Mikhail Sergachev, John Marino, Ian Cole, Bortuzzo, like it just feels like they've compiled a recipe that's going to put them over that hump and get them into the playoffs for the first time as the Utah Hockey Club and for the first time in quite a few years as a team. So, Bill Armstrong has done a remarkable job at the rebuild, and it feels like they're going to take that next step.
Well, we know from experience, but if you ever need a good quote or a thoughtful answer on something, Ian Cole's the guy, all right?
Yeah, Ian Cole has been great. I actually grew up a Pittsburgh Penguins fan, so being able to talk to him about the cups that he won there and talk to him about Sid, who was kind of my childhood hero. And then as well, I have one of my best friends lived in Vancouver for a while, so it was fun to kind of talk to him about that and hear about his experiences. Yeah, he's a phenomenal human being and an excellent interview.
As for this defense corps, they add Ian Cole, obviously John Marino, and the big one, Mikhail Sergachev from the Tampa Bay Lightning. He's always kind of been in the shadow of Victor Hedman. We all know the talent, the ability there. He's coming off a pretty significant injury. How has Sergachev looked, and is he ready to lead this D corps?
Yeah, I think he looks good. He's made progress game to game. I actually had an opportunity to talk to him the other morning, and I just asked him, like, hey, Coach Tarini said that he's noticed some progress and it's been obvious in your play over the course of the preseason. How are you feeling? Do you feel ready? What's been the difference? And he said that he just doesn't have those nerves anymore. He's not nervous about being on a new team or being in a new city. He feels comfortable. He said this feels like home, and he's really excited. It's obviously a tough scenario. I mean, I had heard that he was told that he was being traded while he was taking out the garbage. And to be traded from a place that you called home for so long and found so much success, that can't be an easy pill to swallow. But you know, for him to come to this organization, that there's so much energy and there's so much hype and so much opportunity for him to be, you know, the number one and top defenseman for this club, who is transitioning to, you know, a potential real contender in the next few years. It's exciting, and I think he's ready.
And in terms of, you know, the skill players, the talented players that are going to capture the imagination of a new fan base, I mean, Clayton Keller is as skilled as it gets around the league. But in terms of, you know, his real star power, is he kind of flirting with that, you know, taking that step to being that, you know, real star-level player?
Yeah, I mean, it kind of feels that way. I mean, he said time and again, you know, I'm the same player that I was yesterday. I'm going to be the same player tomorrow. But, you know, what I've noticed over the last couple of days is just how happy he appears to be. He has smiled and been grinning ear to ear nearly every press conference we've had and conversation that I've had with him. You know, I actually just passed him here at the Delta Center on his way to the locker room, and we acknowledged each other. And he just has the biggest smile on his face. And I think that has to do – like, I just – another prediction I made is that he's going to reach that 90 points. That he's going to have a 90-point season for the first time in his career, that he might even go triple digits. And it just kind of feels that way with you know, how he's carrying himself. He's got the C on his sweater. The fan base is already in love with him. And, yeah, just with these additions, you know, they're going to get a lot more help on defense, which hopefully means more time in the offensive zone. The power play looks so much better, which is, you know, anchored by him. And so, yeah, I think he may be able to really reach that superstar level here in Utah.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that we were seeing with these players, as you mentioned, is they're going from a situation in Arizona where, I mean, they didn't know what was going to happen the next year. The fans are barely there. It's a small building. It's not really a professional setup. I mean, in many ways, a lot of these guys, especially the young guys, get to feel like what it's like to be part of a real NHL organization for the first time, which sounds pretty ridiculous, but that's where they're at.
Yeah, I mean, this morning in a press conference, you can just feel that. Logan Cooley said this is the most excited he's ever been to play an NHL game, which is fantastic. And Keller even said as well, they feel free as a team. They feel that they can now just focus on winning hockey games. Because to your point, yeah, for a very long time, you know, these guys have been dealing with a lot of unknowns, you know, wondering, you know, how much longer they were going to be in Arizona. And then, you know, everything last year, I mean, I'm fully convinced that they went on that 14-game losing streak last year because, you know, the rumors started to finally come to fruition. So, yeah, these guys are so energized, and it's palpable at the training facility, at the arena. Anytime you're talking to them, they're ready to go. They're excited, and it's going to make for just an unbelievable season, in my opinion.
How has the buzz been around the city?
It's been unbelievable. I grew up in a hockey family myself here in Utah, and so to be honest, I'm pretty shocked at how well received this team is, and how excited people are. You know, I mean, there's definitely a hockey community here, but you know, the fact that they were able to sell as many season tickets as they did, and to pack this place during a preseason home opener like they did a few weeks ago. And then tonight, like, I'm looking outside the Delta Center right now. There's thousands of people out there that were here to welcome the team on what they call the blue carpet welcome. They've got a concert going on out here with Shaboozy and all that kind of stuff. So, like, this is – and it's a great time for these guys to come in because – the Utah Jazz organization is in the middle of a rebuild, but they are like two or three steps behind where the Utah Hockey Club is. So it's a perfect time for the NHL to come because this is going to be the biggest show in town this season and potentially well beyond because, you know, this team is far ahead of – they're much further ahead than the Jazz are, and they're going to be, you know, the more fun team to watch every night.
Well, it's a market that people outside of Salt Lake probably don't know a lot about, especially up in Canada as well. But obviously, I don't need to tell you that it's a really fast-growing metropolitan area. And also in terms of the fandom as well, whether it's college sports or with Utah Jazz. I mean, when this city decides or decides to back a team, it's like they make that lifelong commitment almost. It feels like they're not just fans that will be fair weather. Like, this is a real hardcore sports team. I mean, sports city as well.
Yeah, I think Utah is an underrated Utah and Salt Lake City are underrated sports state and sports town. The Utah Jazz is impressed on every heart of every kid in the state of Utah, and what's a true testament to how much Utah fans love their teams is last year when the Jazz were one of the worst teams in the NBA and were losing so many games, they were still selling out the arena. Because Utah fans show up for their teams, and college sports are a big deal here as well with the University of Utah and Brigham Young University. That's a top 10 college rivalry in my opinion. And I'm sure you guys have heard it from Bill Armstrong and a lot of the front office, the Utah Hockey Club, kind of share Utah shows up. And like I said, I'm blown away by it. But when I really think about it, I shouldn't be, because Utah shows up and they are so ready for this hockey club.
If there's one thing that neutral hockey fans love to do, it's try to name the next team. And people are really wondering, even in our text message inbox, what the name of the Utah Hockey Club is eventually going to be. What's your money on?
Yeti.
That's it feels like that's where it's going.
Yeah. I mean, they're, I just add a little bit more, on that, they've said that they are now, looking into the legal aspect of it. And when you look at the color scheme and all the branding that they're doing, I just think it's very clearly Yeti.
Cole, we really appreciate the time. This has been a lot of fun. Enjoy the night tonight.
Yeah. Thanks so much, guys. Anytime. This was a lot of fun and looking forward to an incredible night.
There is Cole Bagley, digital insider for Utah Hockey Club on KSL Sports, future Utah Yeti.
Honestly, that was awesome. You could hear the excitement in his voice too, and being a lifelong hockey fan and finally having it in Salt Lake City, and obviously believing in it. And I think that's my big takeaway in general about them choosing Utah, is when you factor in how it's growing as a city, and that has something that that matters in a big way long term. But it's a really hardcore sports state, but also the sports town, right? Yeah. And I think that's really important to the NHL, because these guys can really help boost the value of the league, especially if they're competitive this year. And I think this Utah team has a real chance of being competitive. I'm really excited to watch the game tonight.
Yeah, I mean, they've got a pretty good squad, for everything and all the jokes we made about Arizona through the years. Bill Armstrong, for a long time, had been putting together some pretty good pieces, right? And really building for the future. They went hard in on future assets. And some of those are starting to mature and come to the NHL level. They were able to use some of those to acquire John Marino and Mikhail Sergachev. And not to give too much away, as we're going to do predictions a little bit later on in the program, but you look at this roster and it is, I wouldn't say it is formidable just yet, but there's definitely some talent there, and there's definitely a team that can be a lot more competitive than they have been in recent years. And ultimately, Cole is right. That 14-game losing streak, they won four games between January and March of last year. That probably doesn't happen if they're in a more normal NHL situation and not worrying about their lives beyond the rink, where they're going to be living next year, those kinds of things, for as much as, hey, first world problems, they're making millions of dollars in the NHL, yada, yada, yada. Those are things that can affect the family life and everything else. So I'm curious to see how Utah does this year. They are hosting Chicago in their first game, Ilya Mikheyev goes from Elias Pettersson's left wing to the left wing of Connor Bedard for the Chicago Blackhawks tonight.
Yeah, so you're talking about a guy who went riding shotgun with one of the more talented centers to one of the most talented up-and-coming centers in the league. But honestly, like, I think it makes sense. The reason why Mikheyev finds himself there is he's fast. He's smart enough to play alongside skilled players. He forechecks really well, and he's a really good defensive conscience for a line. That's why he plays with top six caliber players. And as much as he doesn't finish, he gets a boatload of chances, which tells you he does a lot of right things except for not finish. And if he just finishes a little bit better, he's going to get 20 goals this year.
So a couple of things. As mentioned earlier, Blues beat the Kraken, one game in the books. Currently through midway of the first period, the Florida Panthers, trying to defend their Stanley Cup title and off to a good start, have a couple of goals. Sam Bennett and Lustarainen have the goals. They're up 2-0 midway through the first. Not a great start for Jonas Korpisalo, who's had a tough time handling some rebounds and not seeing the puck all that well, as you might think. Nikita Zadorov already a dash one in this, as is, you know.
Already a dash one.
I'm not saying he's a bust of a contract. I'm just saying he's a dash one. Yeah, it's facts only.
Reach already counted out. What team did you count out to begin the show?
Seattle
Kraken, and now you're already crapping on Zadorov.
Well, he's on pace for, what is it, minus 240?
Yeah, it's even more. It's even more, really.
Minus one a period? Like, yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be a really tough year.
Every time he goes over the boards, he's getting scored on.
Could be a tough one for old Nikita. We'll see what happens with the Boston Bruins. But a couple of things back in on the Canucks. You know, Rick Tocchet had his chance to answer a little bit about Nils Höglander for the first time today since he signed that new deal, and really positive on Höglander and all the things that he's always been able to do. But as has always been the conversation, his play off the puck, which Rick Tocchet has been more impressed with, obviously super impressed with the conditioning that he had to start training camp, the best in the conditioning test that the Canucks had to start the year. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the coach has really praised a lot of what Nils Höglander has done. That's part of the reason he got this contract. I guess the question just becomes, how much bigger of a role does Nils Höglander end up having this year?
And that's, I think, going to be really determined by how he fares on the second unit power play. Like, right. It looks like he's getting that chance now. Everything we've seen so far is that Höglander, Sprong, Heinen, they're going to be on that unit in Hronek, and I think I'm missing a forward. It's not Sherwood. It is
Sprong,
Hronek,
Höglander,
Heinen.
That's four.
Yeah.
And we're missing the fifth one.
Yes. Can't think right now. But yeah, I think he's going to be on the first unit power play. And I mean, second unit power play. And I think if he sticks on that, which he didn't do at all, Garland. There we go. So I think if he doesn't stick there, then maybe his production, I think we can be somewhat worried about it. But I think there's a good chance he can stick on that second unit. You know, because the other guy that's going to really compete, I guess, is Sherwood.
Yeah.
Right. But outside of that, it's like there's no obvious, you know, player that you would want on that power play ahead of him. Like Pugh Suter. I'm not sure. I'd rather try Höglander there, right?
Yeah. Höglander looked good in the bumper from what we've seen. He's played a little bit of net front when it's come to the second unit power play and how they've set up at practice. But not that it's like a huge deal. I don't think you're going around the league and seeing a lot of second unit power plays putting up 15 goals in a season. But
no.
Rick Tocchet mentioned it today. Like, we need a little bit more production out of our second unit.
You can't have a bagel.
Yeah.
Like, you have to.
I think they scored two goals all year with the second unit.
Yeah. Like, you can't have, like, you know, fewer than five goals. Like, it has to be five plus. And I know it sounds like not a lot, five, but those five goals can be the difference of winning two or three games.
Yeah.
Like, it really can be. And so I think if you can get to a point where you have a power play that is at least competitive and a threat, and can Höglander pot a couple goals there, you know, play an extra minute in a game or 2 minutes in a game for special teams from time to time, that to me is going to be part of the equation. I just don't know if there is a spot for him right now on the left wing in the top six. If injuries happen, I can see him obviously jumping up. But is he playing on the left wing instead of DeBrusk?
No.
Probably not. Is he playing ahead of Heinen? Probably not, but I guess you could... Is that maybe his most realistic path to playing in the top six? Is usurping Heinen and being that forechecking demon on the left wing that gets on pucks first? And if the coach trusts him more, can that be a spot for him?
I guess like a lot of different things can happen. But, you know, is there a world where DeBrusque moves up to play with Miller and Besser? And Heinen goes into the bottom six. Höglander jumps up to play with Elias Pettersson again.
Yeah.
Like there's the potential of that happening. I think there's a lot of different ways that Höglander can impact this team. And ultimately, we're talking about a 23-year-old that scored 24 goals last year. How much more can he give? Can he be a bit more of a playmaker as well? Like if his goals come down, can he... feed a few apples through the course of the year, because I think he only ended up with, 12 assists last year? Something not a huge number. And I think there's better vision there than what we've seen out of Höglander from the assist totals. Like, even a guy like Sprong, we talk about his shot and his goal scoring, but the guy's had 25 assists each of the last couple of years, right? If you're not scoring the goal, can you be the guy that helps facilitate it as well? And that's something I think... It hurt a little bit Elias Pettersson's numbers that Höglander wasn't didn't have the best vision out there, the best playmaking ability that you could have in the top six.
And those are the types of things that he's going to have to show more consistently to be a true top six player. But the beauty of the contract he signed is it's not going to be onerous if he just excels at being a third line player who can play on your second unit power play and can play up and down your lineup when need be and give you a little bit of a spark. Like if he produces at that 15 to 20 goal range and he's a consistent performer and somebody who brings energy and forechecks really well, then you're fine with it. So that's kind of where I'm at with Höglander. It's like, I think his floor can be relatively low here because the contract's not such where you need him to be a top six performer.
It's Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah coming up. Don Taylor, his take on the upcoming Canucks season is next on Sportsnet 650.
Hitting the most important topics for Vancouver sports fans. The People Show with Vic Nizar. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Back in on Canuck Central, final segment of the show. Saving the best for last?
I would say so, yeah.
It's prediction season.
I mean, Donnie was very great.
Donnie was very good.
He was really
good,
especially, but the flattery. I mean, I'll always take flattery.
He didn't really have any takes. He just, was reciting whatever you said.
No, I mean, he had some takes, but yeah.
Donnie just revealed that all of his takes are just from listening to Sat and regurgitating them.
No, I wouldn't say so. He had plenty of original thought as well.
Yes, I know. I know. Do I?
Well.
All right. Prediction time for the upcoming NHL season it's kind of already began, but one game's not going to change how I feel about the season. Certainly not the games in Europe are going to change how I felt about the season. Newsflash. Also, spoiler alert, didn't have Buffalo making it either way. So them losing to in Prague over the weekend didn't make much of a difference to my ultimate predictions. So we'll go through it. We'll give you our top three in each division and then go through the playoffs and wildcard spots, of course, as well. Let's start in the East because that is the area that we, our listeners focus less on. So we'll save the bigger, juicier predictions for a little bit later on.
Best for last, so to speak.
Yeah, in the Metropolitan Division. Now, this was not a great division last year. It's still a division that's got a pretty bad lower end and a lot of teams that are kind of in the murky middle now, with Philadelphia hoping to be a little bit better, Pittsburgh, hoping that they can survive and give Sidney Crosby a couple of more kicks at the playoffs. But New Jersey is expected to be a lot better, even before their two wins that kicked off the season in Europe. How do you look at the Metropolitan Division?
Yeah, I think the Devils are kind of the flavor of the season in the East heading in, and I think for good reason. I have some doubts about their playoff success and how good they're going to be in the postseason, but I see a team that is going to be supremely motivated, is going to be healthier, hopefully, especially with Dougie Hamilton, and the additions they've made are notable and sizable, especially in goal with Jacob Markstrom. If he plays at his best and he's healthy, that's going to be massive for a team that's really lacked goaltending for a few seasons now. So I think the Devils, for good reason, are the favorites in the division.
In the division, you think they're the favorites?
Right, that's the way I view them. I view them in the division as favorites to win the division. Now, come playoff time, again, I may have different feelings about these things.
Yeah,
but I think motivation's a big factor here, too.
They don't even have Brett Pesce in the lineup right now. He is on IR to start the season. Luke Hughes started the year out as well, suffering a pretty bad injury. It's going to keep him out for a little while. But, a lot of where the Devils really came up short last year, defensively, they became a little bit more of a fire wagon, not great defensively. I think that's pretty obvious where Sheldon Keefe is going to have to get them to buckle down a little bit more in their own end and give up some of the transition chances that they were prone to give up. But ultimately, like, they go from having no good goalies to Jake Allen and Jacob Markstrom as their tandem. So now they have a tandem that would be considered one of the best in the league for what is an extremely talented group all around. Has a great high end with Jack Hughes and Jasper Bratt. You have a great decor. I love the addition of Brendan Dillon to add a little bit of snarl and stay-at-home defenseman to their decor group. So it's hard not to like what the Devils have. I actually have them winning the division, even though I just questioned you thinking that they are the favorite.
Yeah. Well, I mean, see, when you look at the rosters, and the way I view regular season is a lot of it is roster strength, and the other one comes down to, I think, overall motivation and kind of vibes to some extent. And I see a lot of things there for the Devils to have a good regular season.
Yeah.
That's how I view it. But, like, I'd like another team in that division more. Like, I think the Rangers are a team I liked a lot last year that I even like a lot this season. But in the regular season, I can see the Devils having more points.
It's interesting you say that, because I think sometimes teams that have, like, done it a lot or are perennial playoff teams, not that they don't care for the regular season, but they know having the best record in the regular season isn't necessarily what ultimately matters.
Well, especially for a team, the Rangers, they won the President's Trophy last year.
Yeah. So
it didn't get them as far as they wanted.
Yeah. How many times do we see President's Trophy winners go back to back? The year prior was Florida, right? Or a couple of years ago, Florida winning the President's Trophy. What did it mean for them in the playoffs? Nothing, because they had to get rid of, they moved on from Andrew Brunette, made the big trade with sending Huberto to Calgary and all those things. Mm-hmm. So it is something that, especially with the way that the playoffs line up, where you're probably having a tough first round anyways, does expending all your energy in the regular season matter all that much? I think some of those teams that are perennial playoff teams don't value that as much. So my top three ends up rounding out like this. I got the Devils at the top of the division, the New York Rangers in second, and even though Carolina's lost quite a bit, I think there's still enough of a baseline there that they end up being third in that division.
Yeah, and we talked about this in the first segment about Carolina's defense, how they added Shane Gostisbehere and Sean Walker, but they obviously lost Brett Pesce and Brady Shea, two really good defensemen. Now, Pesce had a lot of injury problems last year. I'm not quite sure they are much better. I think offensively too, a couple of losses, they're going to be relying on some younger guys to step up and be better. I'm not as high on Carolina this year. Like, I don't see them as constructed currently as being a team I think I feel good about their Stanley Cup chances.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't love their cup chances, but they're going to be a tough regular season team to beat. I mean, would it shock you if they even finished second or even first in the division? Like, because of their style of play, you know, like, they can be that type of team that can have a great regular season, but I think they're missing a lot of key contributors to make them a formidable playoff team.
They're so well structured, and the way that they play with Rod Brind'Amour as their coach, hard not to like the Carolina Hurricanes. So that rounds out the Metro Division. How does your three round out? Is it same as mine? Devils, Rangers, Carolina?
Yeah, Devils 1, Rangers 2, Carolina 3.
All right. In the Atlantic, I've got... I had a tougher time picking the top team in the Atlantic, and I feel as though Florida, not that I don't see them as a team that can go back-to-back and win the Stanley Cup. They still got a really good team. But Toronto wins the Atlantic. I've got Florida 2 and Tampa Bay 3. So the Atlantic Division looks like the Atlantic Division has often looked, maybe with one key outside of the top three, with Boston maybe taking a little bit more of a fall this year from what we've seen in the past.
Yeah, I think defensively, Boston is extremely stout. Like, they have one of the best blue lines in the NHL, and Zadorov is going to add to that depth, and goaltending should be still fine with Swayman, and I know they're having the issues with Korpisalo, but it's not Swayman playing tonight.
Yeah.
In their opener against the Florida Panthers. But the question with them is, do they have enough pop offensively?
Mm-hmm.
Are they going to be a one-line hockey team? They still have guys like Charlie Coyle and Brad Marchand on their second line, so it's not like they don't have guys, right? But they really need somebody to step up. Right now, they're relying on guys like Geeky, has to take a big step. There's not a lot there on their third and fourth line. Like, it's really relying on guys like Trent Frederick and guys like Brazo to take a step. So you're really looking at, you know, not a lot of depth. So that's going to be my question. Overall scoring punch outside of Pasta, do they have enough one-shot scorers on that team?
Why did I pick the Leafs at the top of the division? I think they are still very much a flawed team, but I do... I think Craig Berube is going to get them playing a little bit more of a stronger style, commitment to defense. Tanev's going to help that team a lot defensively. We all think very highly of Chris Tanev. Don't love the Ekman-Larsson deal, and I don't think he can play consistent top 4 minutes. But ultimately, I just, you know, there's a ton of talent on this team. It has nothing to say about what they're going to do in the playoffs. I can just see them winning the division through
yeah.
the year.
And that's kind of, I see that too with the Leafs. And ultimately, as much as I have questions about Boston's overall firepower, I feel like they can be the best team in the regular season.
Yeah.
I can feel like they can win a lot of close, you know, low scoring regular season games. That gets exposed come playoff time against, you know, a seven game series against top teams. That's where I think they fall short. But I got Boston winning the division.
Whew.
Florida second and Toronto third.
All right. So there is your Atlantic division from Sat. I've got Toronto, Florida, and Tampa Bay. Who do you have in the wild card?
I got Tampa and the New York Islanders.
The Islanders.
Yeah, the Islanders.
Wow.
And a lot of it, honestly, like, I don't feel like, as much as I want to believe in the Sabres, I don't know. The Ottawa Senators, Travis Green is still coaching guys like Adam Gaudette and Zach MacEwen and yeah. Matthew Highmore. I don't
and
know.
Travis Hamonic.
And Travis Hamonic. I got a lot of like,
did Travis Green wake up and be like, what is this
happened?
Bizarro world?
What
how is this happening again?
Yeah, and you know, I obviously think Allmark's a great addition to their blue line and to their goaltending and should stabilize it and has experience. I don't know if their blue line's actually good. They got some good names. I don't know if they're actually going to be good as a unit. And I just don't see it. I just don't see it right now. I have to be convinced.
Yeah.
And then it comes down to teams like Pittsburgh, Detroit, and Washington. Like, how good do you feel about those teams? Like, honestly, I don't think you can go wrong picking any of those teams to be the second wild card team. Like, I think there's clearly seven teams
yeah.
with Tampa.
Yep.
And then there's a group of five or six teams. Like, spin the wheel, whichever one you land on.
I mean, how crazy was the second wild card race in the East last year where... You know, Washington ends up just edging out Detroit on a tiebreaker. Detroit has that crazy final game, right? They're holding it in at the line and all that stuff happening, and it all doesn't end up mattering. Washington gets in and they get swept or they get just absolutely hosed in the first round of the playoffs. I still kind of view that second wild card spot similarly. A lot of these teams aren't all that good. It's just going to be who gets hot at the right time, who's finishing strong at the end of the season to just edge it out over somebody else.
The Flyers were in a top three spot, like a third spot in the division for a long time.
Yeah.
They went 2-6-2 and missed the playoffs in the last 10 games.
Yeah.
If they go 500 and finish with 91 points, they make the playoffs.
Mm-hmm. So that's how crazy that second wild card spot was last year. I ended up picking Pittsburgh. Maybe it was my heart because I want to see Sidney Crosby get back in the playoffs.
Yeah, and maybe that is. And the only reason I end up going with the Islanders is because out of all those teams, they have the best duo in goal with Sorokin and Varlamov. Their defense is still stout, and they're just good enough offensively to like be in games. But that's the only reason I picked the Islanders. I think they're the safest wild card bet, but I'd be happy to see them miss the playoffs because I don't find them to be an interesting team at all.
Yeah, Detroit, I mean, we've talked about this so much over the summer. I'm not sure what Steve Yzerman is really doing with this team. Philadelphia's got some good young players, but they're kind of going to be in the same position. I wouldn't be surprised if they end up with fewer points than they had last year at 87. Still don't believe in the Sabres. Still don't believe in the Senators. Montreal, I can see being better, but they're still a ways off from being a playoff team. And of course, Columbus in a really difficult spot there at the basement for me. All right, moving over to the Western Conference. In the Central Division, I've hummed and hawed about this. I think Nashville's moves are sexy. They win the offseason. It helps them in the regular season. I don't know if I still see them doing well in the playoffs, but I have them winning the Central. I have Dallas number two, and maybe my surprise pick of anything in the West, I have Minnesota finishing third in the Central Division.
Wow. So, I mean, not only do you have Minnesota making the playoffs, you have them finishing third in that division.
Yeah. Last year, it took 107 points to be third in that division. So, that's a big ask.
Yeah, you're high on Minnesota.
I am, yeah. I guess I'm a little high on Minnesota.
Yeah, you're high on them. I am not as high on Minnesota as you are. I
do like some of their young players. I still think they're going to have good goaltending. They're the Minnesota Wild. They play their brand of hockey. So I still see all of those things happening. I've always liked Marco Rossi. Think he's going to have a strong season, maybe a bit of a breakout. And their top six is still pretty good, right? Well, Boldy and Eriksson Ek still have Kaprizov for now. And their defense getting back, Jared Spurgeon's going to help them a lot. So I think there's a good team there if they have better injury luck than they did a year ago there. And I think it's more about Colorado for me than it is about anything else. But that's why I have Minnesota in number three.
Yeah. I can see that. I just think Colorado still, as much as I have some questions about their overall depth, that blue line is still excellent. And I think honestly, low key, one of the best moves any team made late in the offseason, and the Canucks deserve a lot of credit for obviously getting Sprong and even Lankinen for the number they got. But getting Oliver Shillington as a bet that at what about just around $1 million or whatever it was he got paid.
Not bad.
If he can figure it out, he's a legitimate 4-5 defenseman and they got it for $1 million, and that really solidifies their third pair. That can allow them to have one of the best third pairs, no matter who he plays with.
Yeah.
In the conference, and that's in addition to having Girard and Mason as your second unit, which I mean, okay, second pair, but their top pair might be the best in the league, right?
Yeah.
Taves and McCarr, and I think that helps their goaltending. And I do think Lehkonen, as long as he's healthier, and I don't think he's too far away with Rantanen and McKinnon and even Mittelstadt, I think they have enough. And I would imagine whether it's Nichushkin, whether it's Landeskog, or if neither works, that they're going to use their cap space to acquire players, that I think they can add to their forward group. But I think their foundation is very strong still. So I still have Colorado finishing, you know, top three in the division.
Yeah, I just the forward group, it's like if they don't have McKinnon and Rantanen, Jared Bednar was running those guys 23, 25 minutes a night
for sure.
last year.
They got Mittelstadt, though, and I think that helps. I think having him there for the full year it does take a little pressure off of it. I still have, though, winning the division, being Nashville this year.
Yeah.
I think Nashville is going to be super motivated. They have so much firepower. Again, like, the team's going to come together. I think there's going to be a lot of juice there for that team. Nashville, Colorado second, Dallas third.
All right. Nashville, Colorado, and Dallas. So both of us have Winnipeg not being top three in the Central. They had 110 points last year. So maybe both looking at a bit of a drop off. All right. In the Pacific Division, last year it finished Vancouver at the top, Edmonton 2, LA 3. How do you have it finishing this year?
So I've really gone back and forth because I really wanted to pick Vegas first in the division.
Mm-hmm.
I just couldn't do it at the end. Okay. So I have Vegas finishing third, Vancouver second, Edmonton first in the division. But I think it's going to be the most competitive division where all three teams are going to be vying for the first overall. And I think that as the season unfolds, the power in the Pacific is going to be so consolidated between those three teams that it's going to be all about which one of these teams wins the division and plays a wild card team instead of facing each other.
Yeah.
And I think that motivation is going to have those three teams really duking it out this year.
Similar to what happened in the Central last year, I guess, where Dallas ends it up at the top. But I did end up picking Vegas to be top here. I think the motivation factor, how people even like myself have been downplaying them.
Yeah.
I wonder how it looks in the playoffs because I don't know what Mark Stone's health is going to be like. You know, things like that, that's really going to determine where they end up. But I was listening to 32 Thoughts the other day and I think it was Kyle or Elliot brought up that Jack Eichel is underrated by a lot of people. I'm like, I feel that too, you know, because you don't see Jack Eichel being thought of as a top 10 or top five guy in the league as far as centermen go. I think he's right there. He just doesn't score as much as the high-end guys do. And there's still some really good things going on in Vegas, even though losing Marchessault and Stevenson ends up hurting them, I think, more come playoff time. But I can see a bounce back for them after finishing as the second wild card last year. I got Vegas at the top, Edmonton 2, and Vancouver at number 3. And for my wild card teams, I've got Colorado and Winnipeg as my wild card teams.
All right. I have Winnipeg.
Yeah.
And the Utah Hockey Club.
You have Utah.
I'm picking Utah to make the playoffs.
Wow. He's caught up in the hype.
I'm caught up in the Utah hype.
He heard Cole Bagley, and he's just like, I got to pick Utah.
They have a good defense. They have a good goaltending duo. I think Ingram is very underrated. Vemelka is solid, too. So I think their duo is very strong in net. I think their defense is probably close in the Tier 2 category, like getting to that level.
Maybe this is a hot take, but I don't know about Mikhail Sergachev.
Yeah, I mean, it's fair. He's never been a
number one guy.
Yeah. Does he have to be number one, though? Like, you know what I mean? Like, instead of forcing him to play 25 minutes a game.
So there is your picks. As far as a cup final goes and a winner, who do you have winning the Stanley Cup?
All right. I have the New York Rangers beating the Colorado Avalanche in the Stanley
Cup Colorado
final.
All the way to the final.
Yes, I do. Because I think
forward group.
Yeah, I think they're going to figure it out. And I have them. I know we don't have it in our predictions, but I have Colorado beating the Canucks in the Western Conference final.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right.
So I think the Canucks get to the Western Conference final, get knocked
Canucks
out by
get
Colorado.
Through Edmonton at some point then?
I think they find a way to get through.
Mm-hmm. That's what has me feeling really nicey.
Okay. It's a tough way through for the Canucks. Like, just thinking about it, like, okay. So in your scenario, they have to get through Vegas in the first round and then Edmonton in the second round.
And that's why I think it's going to be hard for whatever team that gets out of the Pacific to be able to beat the next team, because it's like, it's a murderer's row to get through there.
Similar to how Dallas felt like they ran out of gas once they met Edmonton.
Exactly.
In the West Final last year. In the Cup Final, I've got Dallas over the New York Rangers.
Oh, Rangers too.
Again, you know, the decor, the goaltending, and the top end of the roster is good. Dallas, you know, those young players take another step. Dallas is going to have a really deep roster, and they're pretty good all around. Expect to bounce back from Jake Oettinger this year as well. So that's my Stanley Cup pick. I do have the Canucks, unfortunately, losing out to Edmonton in the first round of the playoffs in my scenario.
So tomorrow, do you want to do some? We can throw the rewards in. Awards tomorrow.
Yeah, we are running just out of time. So tomorrow, it'll be a couple more days late, but we'll give you a Hart Trophy winner, a Rocket Richard winner, and of course Vezina and Norris trophies.
We'll do a Selke too.
Can Kiefer Sherwood win all of those?
Or? He might.
He might be able to. That is a realistic outcome for this year. There's a non-zero chance.
Cool.
They even give him the Norris Trophy.
Wow. Good for him.
Sat said all this to me off air, actually. That's not true.
Sat has the script.
I have the script. They forwarded it to me this year.
Did you tell Kipper and Bourne how do you think of Kiefer Sherwood or no?
I didn't
come up in the conversation.
They didn't ask me about Sherwood. They didn't ask me about, you know, the Rocket Richard. If they would have asked me about the Rocket Richard, and this text, we'll end it on this, Dunbar Lumber text inbox. Thank goodness neither of you said Oilers for the Cup because I didn't want to have to stop listening. Have you seen everybody picking the Oilers?
Everybody's picking the Oilers, man. It made me want to fade them so bad. I'm just like... It never happens this way where like the team everybody is choosing ends up winning the Stanley Cup. All right, that's going to do it for our predictions. We'll have a little graphic out on Twitter in case you missed it and Instagram as well. For producer Josh, my co-host Sat, I'm Dan. Tomorrow, game one, Rogers Arena. We'll be at Park for the pregame. Hope you'll join us there for a bevy and some eats before puck drop. At 7 o'clock. We'll see you then on Sportsnet 650.